There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
All right, the NBA season is in full swing, coming down the stretch. Then we move right into the playoffs in April, May, and June. I can't wait. Spice things up with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Right now, all you have to do is put down $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Pretty good trade-off. I pay $5, I get $150. North Carolina listeners, do not forget. Welcome to the party. DraftKings Sportsbook now live in your state, North Carolina. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Takes 90 seconds. The code is Colin, C-O-L-I-N. Again, 90 seconds. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app. Put in Colin. New customers bet $5, get $150 back in bonus bets instantly. That is the trade. Code is always Colin. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, one no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, a day later, but never a dollar short. John Middlecoff, former NFL scout. We do our 50 minutes to an hour, chop it up. And even though this is the NFL's offseason, there's all sorts of news going on. DraftKings released its NFL win totals. There's a couple of weird ones. God, did Kirk Cousins get respect? The Falcons are 10.5. That is ultimately Vegas and DraftKings telling you Kirk Cousins is a very good, capable quarterback in this league. 10.5, by the way, is the same number for Josh Allen in the Bills and Joe Burrow in the Bengals and Tua and Mike McDaniels. So I think it's funny. There's certain people in every industry that are way more respected than the public understands. John Middlecoff, the former NFL scout, 3 and out. That of all the DraftKings unders and overs, Falcons 10.5 was like, holy crap. And they do have a good old line for Kirk, but I think Kirk Cousins is way more respected in the league than he is outside of the league.
Well, think about it. The previous year, right? They won 13 games. They were in the playoffs. They started slow this year, but they were coming on. He was playing his best football. They would have been a clear factor to make a wild card. I mean, he's proven. I mean, if he's healthy and the team's solid, he's a playoff. Might not win in the playoffs, but he can get you there, which, let's face it, 90% of owners would sign up for in a heartbeat just to be, you know, playing football in the middle of January. I think people, you know, obviously you want to win the Super Bowl. All these teams just want to make the playoffs.
Right.
In football, a lot like March Madness, it's not a 7-game scenario. The Giants were not as good as Minnesota 2 years ago, but they beat them. And they played in the second round, and then they got their breaks beat off by the Eagles. You just got to get to the dance. And then we saw the Giants win two Super Bowls as wild card teams. They went on the road. Football is kind of unique that way.
Yeah. And also, to give you a double shot of Kirk Cousins' value, the Vikings, despite a loaded offensive roster, I think what's considered one of the sharper offensive coaches, the Vikings are only a 6.5 win team. Well, that's Kirk Cousins. And we both like Sam Darnold athletically, but they're telling you there's a gap of like 3 to 4 games between Kirk Cousins and Sam Darnold. So if you just look at the over-unders on the Falcons, 10.5, Vikings, 6.5. And we know the coach with Minnesota in an offensive pivoting league is a really effective coach. Won a game without a practice with Josh Dobbs. The Vikings are one of the more talented teams in the league offensively, 6.5 wins. So that doubles down on Cousins is viewed inside analytics, Vegas, DraftKings, the league, much higher value than everybody outside of the league.
Well, of all the guys, right, not making huge money or a young player who's going to ascend to make a lot of money like a CJ Stroud, Sam Darnold either is going to set himself up to be a starting quarterback for the foreseeable future if he has a good year and he's successful, or he's just going to be a lifetime backup. I mean, that's because he's going to get judged. I mean, even if they end up drafting J.J. McCarthy, he's going to start. It'd be hard for that guy to beat him out come week one. But if he plays well, and there are definitely people to play well with, right, at wide receiver. But if it does not go well, like his days of ever being discussed anymore, and I'd be done holding on as well. Not that I have much stock, but I haven't sold it all.
That's right. I feel the same way. So J-Mac on our show today, the Herd FS1, brought up a really interesting point. He's very good at this because he's got a lot of contacts with agents and stuff. So here's Jim Harbaugh just continually saying, J.J. McCarthy's the best player in the draft. I mean, this guy's unbelievable. Well, as he brought up today, Minnesota is poised to move up. Every rumor on every board is Minnesota's moving up. They've accumulated 2 first picks. Well, they don't want to move up to first, second, or third probably, because then you'd have to give up multiple ones, you know, for a college player. But you could move up to 5 with the Chargers and probably get J.J. McCarthy, because we don't believe, unless the Giants move up spots to go to Arizona's spot, it really is very – nobody – Chicago's not giving up their pick. I don't think Washington's given up their pick. Now, New England's open for business at 3, but I think there's some misgivings with Jaden Daniels' size, some of his style of play, to put him up in New England in that weather. My guess is – so J-Mac said what they're doing basically is Harbaugh saying how great McCarthy is, because if you like J.J. McCarthy, he'd be a reach at 1, 2, or 3. But at 5, if he is a reach – it's not a huge reach if he's projected to be 9, 10, 11, 12. And all Harbaugh is doing is saying, oh, this guy's great. He wants you to spend more to get his 5th pick. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly what he's doing, right?
Well, Adam Peters told the local guys today they're not open for business. They've listened, but they were never open
for business. That's Washington's GM.
That's Washington's GM. I do think the Patriots saying that, here's the problem for the Chargers. Ideally, they would love to do that deal, right? 11, 23, maybe next year's 2, big haul, kind of help reset their roster. Monty Austinfort, the Arizona Cardinals GM, said, we have flashing lights open for business, right? Flashing lights. Gerard Mayo said within the last 24 hours, we're open for business too. If teams trade up before the Chargers, it takes 2 to tango. Teams often say, hey, we wanted to move back or we wanted to move forward. We couldn't get a yes on the other end of the line. What if quarterbacks and teams trade, either the Patriots take a guy or trade back, and the Giants and the Vikings take 3 and 4? What happens to the Chargers if they get stuck there? Because I have a hard time, Colin, envisioning them. And I know these wide receivers are viewed very highly, and I know they just got rid of 2. Google Jim Harbaugh's history. And his GM just came from the Ravens. They would much more be inclined to take a lineman. That's more their style high in the draft. But they already have a left tackle. Googling Alt, he's only played on the left side. I think it's a little rich for the Oregon State guy who's more of a right tackle potentially.
Yeah.
They already have 2 defensive linemen, but you could always take a defensive lineman. I don't think there's a guy viewed as a number 5 overall pick in this draft at that spot. They could get stuck pretty quickly. Now, they could just take a wide receiver. Do you envision a Ravens GM and Jim Harbaugh taking a wide receiver with the 5th overall pick? I can't.
So I have envisioned if the Chargers got Minnesota's picks and it was 2 firsts, my first thing I envisioned would be they move back to like, what is it, 11 or 12? What are the Vikings?
It's 11, yeah.
My takeaway is that they would take the Oregon State tackle at 11, maybe a bit high, but he's a bruiser. And they could also use him on the interior if there are issues. And then I think their second pick would be a defensive tackle from like Texas or one of the big interior linemen. Right tackle, defensive tackle. And I'm like, that's exactly the how. And then they'd go get a center. They got 2 fourth round picks. They're going to get a center of the third or the fourth round. That's what Jim wants to do. He wants to get big. You know, George Young, the legendary Giants GM, used to always say, when in doubt, go big. That's how Harbaugh and Baltimore and the Harbaughs draft. They just go big a lot. Hell, I can make an argument. Zay Flowers is the first home run wide receiver hit that Lamar Jackson's had, where Odell didn't make any impact. Mark Andrews has been really the star of the receiving game. So, yeah, I'm with
and
you.
And they took him in the 20s.
Yes.
Right? The Ravens, the Haloti Ngata's, those types, they take higher. Ronnie Stanley, Zay Flowers, are they taking, even though Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze are viewed as top 10, Marvin Harrison, I have a really hard time. Now, maybe Marvin Harrison, he's seen him up close and personal. Maybe he feels very comfortable with that player, but I can't imagine that's what they want to do. But I can already envision them getting stuck, because if a quarterback goes 1, 2, 3, 4, whether that's trade ups, obviously Arizona would have to trade back, but let's say the Patriots even stay there. What if there's no one to trade with the Chargers?
Well, yeah. You know, so today the New York Giants, the Mara family said, that they can draft a quarterback at number 6. The Maras said they will allow the GM and the coach if they think it's necessary.
Nice of them.
Nice of them to say you can draft a quarterback. So I think they will. I could see the Giants actually, my guess, I don't know if I'd do Jaden Daniels in that weather. I would much rather have. So don't we both agree it's going to go Caleb Drake, May 1 and 2? Do we agree with that?
Pelissero said today from the league meetings that he's heard a lot of J.J. McCarthy with Adam Peters. And when you think of Adam Peters' history, right, even recently, they won a lot with Jimmy Garoppolo. And then they had immediate success with Brock Purdy. Now, obviously, these two guys are two of the best. I mean, Brady's the best player ever, and Peyton Manning's a top 5 quarterback. He was around those guys in Denver and then New England. So prototypical. And the one guy that he completely whiffed on with the group was Trey Lance. So I wonder if they're more inclined. I heard Drake May forever, but then when I saw that, I don't think that's just getting thrown around, because if JJ could go 4, what the hell's the difference of taking him 2? If people like him at 4 or 5, it's not crazy to think someone would like him at 2, right? It's the same pick, essentially.
So
you either think the guy's a starting quarterback and a high level or not.
Right. As a former NFL scout with the Eagles, take me inside. So I got into this thing today. I said, Denver's in a weird spot. So are the Raiders. Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell can't be the future in that division. All right. But what if you have Bo Nix at, let's say, 24? Your scouts say, we think he's the 24th best player. Do I take him? Now, it's quarterback, and I do believe I'm willing to reach at pass rusher or quarterback. Receiver, I won't, because there's a glut of talent. There's not a glut of receiver or quarterback talent annually in this league. Max Crosby, 5th round, is a complete outlier. Brady in the 6th round, yeah. Outlier. So what do you do if your scouting department says, listen, we have him like 24, 25, and we've got the 11th or the 12th pick. I'm Denver, I'm the Raiders. And I mean, what do you do? What's the discussion in the draft room?
I saw a quote today from Joe Shane, the Giants GM, and he said what makes it very unique at the quarterback position, and Chris Ballard talked about this forever, right? Everyone always wanted me to take a quarterback. Well, if I don't like the guy at pick 18 or 15 or 20, just because he's quote-unquote falling, it's not a defensive lineman or a wide receiver or a defensive back that I can mix in. He can just ultimately become my nickel corner. Or, you know, he didn't turn out to be a tackle, but he can be my guard, or he can be my run-stuffing defensive tackle. Even if it clearly was the wrong pick, he can still... Quarterback's bad, he's awful, and he just doesn't play.
Right.
So I think it gets very tricky about just because a guy, quote-unquote, is falling. Guys that falling and then are picked, it's because that when Aaron Rodgers fell to the Packers, they liked him a lot. Same with Jordan Love, right? He felt other teams didn't like him, but they valued him and they took him. So I think if a quarterback is, quote, you know, if Bo Nix there in the mid-teens, you either like the player or you don't at that value. And if you don't, you know, if you're unsure, I would never pick the quarterback, because that's where you get in these positions where you're kind of stuck, where even these other, the Chargers wide receiver last year was a disaster. Well, you don't, it's like, well, maybe we figure something out. Maybe he becomes our third wide receiver. Maybe there are a couple things he can do well for.
That's right.
At quarterback, he either can play or he can't.
That's right.
And that's why J.J. McCarthy, I looked at some of their athletic testing numbers. Alex Smith was taller. I think there are a lot of similarities with Alex Smith. And once Alex got real coaching, Andy and Harbaugh, he was a really solid quarterback. Never Josh Allen or Mahomes, but he was damn good you could make the playoffs with. And I think, and just because a guy has a high physical ceiling, Jaden Daniels, there's no guarantee. So you have to like the guy, and then you have to be able to, everyone puts the comps always like, this guy's the next Patrick Mahomes. I've been watching football for 30 years. I've seen one Patrick Mahomes. remember when Draymond was drafted for five straight years? Like, this guy's going to be the next Draymond. There hasn't been a Draymond since. But no one ever wants to comp. Like, you know what? This guy might be Alex Smith. Because everyone always wants the guy to be a higher in the first round.
Sure.
You can do that with mid-round picks. But no one ever comps. Like, yeah, I think this guy's a third wide receiver. Well, we're taking the guy at 20. Like, that's a problem. So I think you got to be very careful with quarterbacks high in the draft. That's why I think teams get very comfortable when a guy falls to the second. You've seen a lot of success stories. Matt Schaub, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo. There's a lot less pressure. You don't have to play him right away. Let's face it. In modern day football, if I draft a guy, Raiders, Denver, in the top 15, no one wants to see Gardner Minshew or whoever, Denver, Jared Stidham for long. Might give me a game or two, but just throw the other guy in. And that sometimes can just get yourself in a massive, massive problem. That's why J.J. McCarthy makes sense for Minnesota. They don't have to throw him in right away. Lamar Jackson, back in the day with
Baltimore,
with the Ravens, they had Flacco, right? So he didn't start till the middle of the season, kind of got to ease in. Even Brock Purdy, now he was a seventh-round pick, but he wasn't forced into action right away. Some of these guys get forced into action. I don't care who you are. As a young person, your confidence is very, very brittle. I mean, you saw Bryce Young. He has another year like that. It could just ruin his career.
Right.
We've seen it happen. What Alex Smith overcame with Nolan and Singletary is one of the greatest accomplishments I've ever seen. Most guys, it just ends them, right? But he didn't break, and then Harbaugh kind of resurrected him. So I think that you have to be realistic with your expectations at quarterback. But no, it's very black or white. There's no like, well, we can mix this guy in 25 snaps. And that's where I think you get into a lot of problems with the position.
Yeah. I mean, if you whiff with a quarterback at the 12th spot, you just wasted a pick. I mean, it's one thing if you trade a first round pick like the Rams had done for years to get, you know, Jalen Ramsey and good players. It's another one you don't have it because you whiffed on a quarterback. It's just hard to overcome. The Deion Sanders thing is interesting. Like, listen, Colorado football has been irrelevant outside of the Bill McCartney days most of my life. There was the Eric Bieniemy. There was that 4 or 5 year run when they just got a lot of LA kids and they were fun. And it was really, really a really interesting program for about 5 years. And so when Deion got the job, you know, my take is he'll make them interesting and he'll recruit. But I wonder if he's doing a disservice to his son. So he's talked about this whole, my son doesn't want to play in cold weather. Well, shit, in January, take out Miami and domes. You know, 27 of the 32 teams are cold. Like, you know, it's, you know, there's more, you know, Detroit, thankfully, is in a dome, and Minneapolis, Minnesota's in a dome. But there's just a lot of cold weather football. I mean, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens, the Patriots, the Seahawks for a while. The Niners can be very cold in January, December. They've dominated most of the last 25 years of NFL football, 27 years, Pittsburgh. I think Shedeur Sanders is really interesting. I wouldn't take him over Caleb or Drake May, but I do think there's an argument I could take him over Jaden Daniels. When his dad says there may be an Eli Manning situation, boy, my takeaway is Elway was probably the greatest quarterback prospect ever. That's why he's even referenced today. Eli Manning's brother, Peyton, won the MVP the year he's coming out. So there's a, oh, here we go. Peyton now is the best young quarterback. Let's get his brother. There was a lot of leverage. Does Shedeur Sanders, even with Deion as a dad, have any leverage to do that?
Well, I think both those guys said it when they were established as the number one pick going into the draft. You know, this guy still has another year of college where, let's face it, anyone that watched the second half of Colorado football, it was a fucking disaster.
His last four games, he had 6 touchdowns.
he was not very good. Now, his first couple games were pretty remarkable. It fell off a cliff. Obviously, it doesn't take, you know, an NFL scout to watch his physical talents, right? He can run. He's got a big arm. But by no means, if you just pulled NFL GMs that watched him on tape, would they say he's some lock top pick. Deion's one of the greatest prospects of all time as well. And he, you know, he was in one of the great drafts with like Barry Sanders and Jim Kelly. I forget exactly. No, that was way before him. But whoever his draft was incredible. In the Derek Thomas. And I remember Deion had a famous story about someone wanted him to take a cognitive test. And he asked him, what pick you're taking? It was like the Giants and they were ninth. He's like, I'm not going to be there. I mean, Deion had a lot of leverage because he was an all-time great prospect. Let's just let us see how these guys, we don't even know what position Travis Hunter is going to play. Is he a DB or a wide receiver? Right. I mean, he eventually has to establish a position to play in the NFL. He's not going to go both ways.
Well,
so to put this pressure, and I understand he's like a father. He basically is a father to Travis as well. I have no problem having confidence. Like, these guys are going to be great NFL players. He's going to have a big season. But to make that statement already, let's face it, kind of puts a bad taste into everyone's mouth coming in there. Because like you said, one, you end up, whether you're playing in LA, San Francisco, or Green Bay, you end up playing cold weather games all the time. Right, with cross rivals, even teams in your own division end up being cold. The playoffs turn cold on the road. He plays in Colorado right now. It's not warm. What's the weather right now in Denver? Probably like 35, 40 degrees. So I understand that. You know, he's a Texas, Florida guy. But this guy's not Caleb Williams or Trevor Lawrence. People, not everyone's universally agreeing that he's some elite player.
Elway, Luck, Trevor, and Caleb going into the season were a unanimous MVP, Shadur isn't. I think people forget this. If you take Jordan Addison out of the equation, SC, Pittsburgh to SC to the Vikings, the last 2 years without an elite offensive teammate, he had 93 touchdowns, Caleb Williams, and 10 picks. Those are, and this year was the best the Pac-12's been in my adult life. I mean, it was really as good. I mean, Arizona was good. I mean, Oregon, Washington, it was excellent.
Washington State was solid. Cal was frisky.
Yeah. So it's like, guys, come on. What are we talking about here? Utah's always good. So I can like Shadur Sanders. I don't think he's close to the power thrower of Caleb Williams. And both had bad offensive lines this year. Look at the numbers. I mean, down the stretch, Shadur, and I liked him against TCU. The more I saw of Shadur, the less I liked him. That's probably what
I think if you had to go off today, Travis Hunter is a better prospect than Shadur Sanders. Now, obviously that can change and he plays the most important position, but there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on him, at least early, once they started being terrible, people, you know, fell off. But I think this year, and it's going to be fascinating. Let's face it, he plays in a crappy conference. I mean, I would imagine the Big 12 of now the four, the Big 10 and the SEC, I would say the ACC is going to be viewed as better than the Big 12 going into the season. So he, you know, when it all said and done, what if he's kind of playing nobodies and he's not that great again? I mean, are we talking about some for sure top 10 pick? I'm not saying that he could be the number one pick, but he also could be a second round pick.
Right.
I mean, there's just no, I would not put the rubber stamp right now. He is some lock top 10 pick. That's just not the way it works. And things change. Think how often J.J. McCarthy wasn't viewed as a top 10 pick coming into the season. Hell, even after the season, I don't think universally the average person would be like, that's a top 10 pick. Now he's going to go like top five.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels kind of had the Joe Burrow ascension. No one was talking about that guy. Wins the Heisman. Now he's talked about as Bo Nix. I mean, things change very rapidly in football with the prospects at the quarterback position. So if they're going to talk a big game, which Deion does, because Deion can back it up, I think sometimes he talks for his kids. And, you know, last year, that Colorado State situation, talking before the game, before what happened? Well, his best player got destroyed, ruptured a kidney, and like almost died on the field. So Deion's coach now, right? He's not the player. So you put this added pressure on him, and he'd say, well, they have pressure no matter what because of my name. And that's true. But I think this is another level. I mean, that's going to be a major talking point all next fall.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
So they're at the league meetings. The hip drop tackle was banned. The defensive players are objecting to it. It's very hard for a smaller player to tackle a big player. Puts the defense at a further disadvantage. I don't think the league cares. Also, it means more passes to the tight end. And my takeaway is they're going to throw the ball to the bigs more. Replay assistants will now be permitted to change incorrect calls for roughing the passer and intentional grounding. People could argue, God, that's too much complexity to the replay system. I actually like that. None of these bother me. I don't think, you know, one of the things that has changed in football and for the better, people often say they like defense. They like their team having a good defense. They don't really like defense. So if I said to you the Super Bowl was 9-6 or 28-27, fans would take the latter. People love defense when it's theirs. But fans will watch any great offense. It doesn't matter if it's the greatest show on turf, it's Mahomes in his biggest year with Tyreek. And so I think the league's very clearly saying, we're trying to keep the players healthy. We're going to lean offense. It's good for fantasy. It's good for TV. Almost everything to me is just safety or TV product. That's how I view all these rule changes.
Well, my initial reaction is I don't think it's necessary. Because I think the defensive player, you know, the pure football element, if I'm trying to get, most guys are not Ray Lewis, Patrick Willis, and Brian Urlacher that just form tackle anybody in space. I'm doing whatever I can to get Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, or Travis Kelce to the ground. Well, who did I just name? Beside the quarterbacks, the most famous players in the league have the ball in their hand. They want Deebo Samuel, Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley. They don't want them to get injured. Right, those are the people for fantasy football. People watch the casual fan, which the NFL has more of. They want to protect those guys. So I think it's just simple. Do they truly care about safety? I don't think they even did with the head. They just didn't want to get sued anymore. It was all a cover your ass move, and that's been regulated out of the game. Right, there's no people don't launch themselves anymore. The quarterback, and you've been saying this forever. The quarterback's the most important position for all of us fans to watch. No one wants to watch the Bills play the Chiefs with two backup quarterbacks.
Right.
Even if we get mad on ridiculous roughing the passers, the intention is to keep those guys safe. And that I understand that. This one, I'm not going to freak out until I see the way they call it, because as a defender, the overwhelming majority of players are just trying to get the player to the ground.
Right.
No one's trying. Even the guy that hurt Mark Andrews, obviously he was not trying to injure him. And I think this is where the players have been saying this forever. Once they cut the quote-unquote headhunting, they go after the knees. Well, what pays the bills for these guys? Their legs. And so we've seen a lot of knee injuries because guys get their knees blown out. It happened to the taller players like Gronk forever. So, listen, I think they overreact to stuff like this. And the writing was on the wall a couple weeks ago when they were all openly talking about it in the league office. I would imagine a lot of coaches don't like it. But as we've seen, they don't give a shit what the coaches think. You know, so this care. Is all, like you said, it gets back to the TV. It's why whenever you see these rules, 90% of the time, the coaches would always vote no. They have no power. It's just the league, the owners, and the money, which then the coaches and the players all benefit from. But some of these rules, back to, remember, the CBA, there's no practice anymore. Well, yeah, that limits the development of young quarterbacks and offensive linemen. But Roger Goodell and his team is not thinking about that. They're just thinking about revenue growth.
Yeah, and safety.
They've kind of figured out a formula.
Yeah.
And safety.
So
for the offensive players.
You know, it's interesting. I've always had kind of a theory about what I do, is that if I get new information, I change my opinion. And I'm not your classic journalist, obviously. I'm not a boots on the ground guy, but I texted two NFL GMs today about something. So, and you have the same contacts and the same kind of effort, is that we're both seeking information constantly. And sometimes I just get new information. And I was very cool on Ryan Poles, former offensive lineman, the Bears GM. Vilas Jones pick, I could not stand at number 3. I just thought it was a complete whiff, and I thought they just didn't do their homework, or their SEC scout didn't do their homework, because at SC he couldn't track the ball. He was a returner, Max. I didn't love the Chase Claypool move, but I understood it. Mooney was a smaller player. Chase was a big body, had a great rookie year. Distracted player didn't work. But I got to tell you, as a former offensive lineman, I think he's put some effort into draft capital, and I think their left tackle and right tackle can both play. They had another tackle they moved inside. They've saved his career. I thought the DJ Moore move, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift, Gerald Everett. I've got to be honest. A year ago, I did not trust Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears. But I've got new information. The other thing they're doing, which the Steelers aren't, the Steelers and the Bears are defined defensively. Their cultures, I mean, outside of Bradshaw and Ben and some talented receivers, it's a defensive culture. He is saying, no. And that's not what we're going to do here. We're going to spend money on offense. That's what the Rams do. That's what the Browns are doing. That's what the Chiefs are doing. It's the opposite of the Steelers. So I find over the last 2 weeks when he went and got Keenan, DeAndre Swift, good pass-catching running back, 25-year-old kid, good player, not a great player, good player. And then Gerald Everett with Cole Kmet. Those are functional, smart players. I've got to be honest, between Caleb, who I really like, between these offensive pieces, I almost feel like I've got new information. I think the Bears got the GM right. How is he viewed inside the league?
Well, I mean, I think he had what has potential to be one of the great moves in the history of the league in that trade that he made last year with the Carolina Panthers, right? Because for a while, it looked like he was going to be defined on some of his worst moves that was early on. I mean, that Chase Claypool move was pretty embarrassing because his pick ended up being really high. And I think... the Steelers ended up drafting Joey Porter Jr., who's a really high-end player. I mean, that pick at the beginning of the second round is very, very valuable. But that Carolina Panther trade, I mean, truly was a game changer. And if Caleb, he does not have to become Patrick Mahomes. If he just is a top 10 NFL quarterback, which would be probably the best quarterback in the history of the franchise, it would change their franchise forever. And he took advantage of a team and an owner who was desperate and cleaned up. Right. And he also added one of their best players who was under contract in DJ Moore. Because my first thought last year when they traded for Sweat, I'm like, God, that's a little much. Well, then they immediately got him. They started winning games. Their defense was better. So their draft pick actually ended up not as bad. They got him under contract. And like, actually, that aged pretty well. I had to kind of eat that. I was like, well, that's not as crazy as it looked. So, yeah, when you work for Andy and Veach and John Dorsey, he was around a lot of high level people for a while. And I think it's fair. I'm sure you would agree. And you've done this just like most people. Every human being makes bad business decisions.
Right.
Most people's are not public. As a GM, every move you make is very public. Right. So you're going to have bad ones, but it doesn't have to define you if your great moves are awesome. Joe Douglas has had some really good moves for the Jets, but his quarterback moves so far have just not worked out. And it's going to ultimately get him fired if they don't work.
Right.
So if you figure out the quarterback situation, which they are primed to do in Chicago, all these other kind of, they're not even ancillary moves because they were kind of big, have a chance to, if DJ Moore is just in the Pro Bowl for a couple years and Sweat's a Pro Bowler, I mean, we're going to be talking about this guy like a top 10 GM. And if he can get the Bears as a winning operation, now, as a GM, you're also very dependent on your head coach. There is no great general manager that doesn't either have a good to great head coach. So you don't, once the season starts, you're not implementing anything. You're not with the players. Well, you're not doing anything, really.
Look,
so
he's Chris Ballard's,
if he gets a second.
Yeah, Chris Ballard's reputation is going to improve over the next 2 years because of Shane Steichen.
Well, I mean, he might have the next Kyle Shanahan.
Right.
So it's going to change his life. Right. It already did this year. The quarterback got hurt. We're all like, oh, the Colts are screwed. All of a sudden, they're in the playoff mix week 17 with Gardner Minshew. So there's a lot of pressure on Eberflus. And most GMs get two coaches. So this was kind of a package deal. Polian, remember, was involved with the hiring of these guys.
He was.
Definitely Eberflus. So if this doesn't work out, you get another one. You got to get it right. Because if he gets it right with Caleb and the players, he could be viewed as an elite guy. But if he doesn't, a lot like the quarterback position, just because you have a good quarterback, if your coach isn't good enough, you're going to be in trouble. I think the pressure on Eberflus, Sirianni and McCarthy, because of their markets, because, I mean, it's the Cowboys. He has no years left on his contract. They almost fired Sirianni like 2 months ago. Those guys are going to be in their own little stratosphere in the way we talk about it. But I think Eberflus, the pressure starts immediately because of their roster, because of the talent, and because they have a quarterback that we've been talking. It happened in Jacksonville. Right. Part of Urban Meyer, obviously there was a lot going on, but like you got handed Trevor Lawrence. So to me, the pressure gets multiplied by like 10, you know, that Frank Reich, all of a sudden we draft this guy at number one, we trade our franchise. I got to fire you. It's not worth that adds an element of pressure with the high quarterback pick, or it makes you D'Amico get the guy right. We're like, God, D'Amico's a shooting rocket ship. Now he would have figured it out because D'Amico's pretty special. But I don't know. I mean, Eberflus looks like he's changed his look. Feels a little younger.
Have
and hipper.
You noticed that?
Yeah. So his team's good. I mean, there's no disputing the roster talent is. I mean, Keenan Allen's a real. They have multiple receivers. They have a tight end. They got some good. They have picks. It's the other thing. It's not like they just get Caleb, then they'll pick again until the second round. They have the 9th pick in the draft. So the ability to either trade back or take a player. Imagine if they get that right. So they have this really talented roster on paper already. And they had Caleb Williams and player X. If that guy becomes an immediate impact player, you know, are we talking about this team as a wild card?
Well, if I was Chicago, I'd trade down at 9. I really would. We've talked about the Chargers and the Giants. I think those positions like 5 and 6 are too rich for some of these quarterbacks. 9, you know, if somebody wants to go Raiders 11-9, that's different than 11.
Denver's sitting right there too.
Yeah, so I could see where the Bears would move down just 3 spots because this draft, I've been told, has 18 first-round players. It's usually about 15 to 16. This feels like 18 or 9. The UCLA end is kind of the end of perceived first-round talent. You know, the end of the first round, those last 8, 9 picks, it's no man's land. Everybody would rather have top of the second picks. But, sure. But I've heard the UCLA rush end is probably in that small group of last considered elite start day one players, be very productive. So I do think the Bears are in a good spot. Jalen Johnson, the corner, Montez Sweat, defensive line. I would think if they've got 2 receivers now, my take was their offensive moves in free agency signaled that number 9 pick is going to go defense. They got to give Eberflus something, right? You can't just keep saying, I got receivers, I got tight ends. And for the record, I think they probably need, I mean, if you look at that position, there's a Verse from Florida State. They could probably use another rush end.
Yeah, you could take the Bama pass rusher as well. You could take one of those 2 guys for sure if you get stuck. The one thing with Chicago, you'd say that division, Detroit kept their offensive coordinator, who I think a lot of people view as the linchpin of that operation. So they're going to be good again. The talent on that roster is not really debatable. It's top 5, 6 in the NFL, the Lions roster. And like most people, it's hard to bet against the Packers if Jordan Love's going to be a good player. So it's not like it's going to be easy for them, right? That they're playing in, and if Minnesota's just a credible operation with a lot of good, talented players, it's going to be a challenge. And even if Caleb is really good, it's the NFL is hard. I mean, Peyton Manning set a record for interceptions his rookie year. So it's just the pressure that comes along with it. Now, Caleb, like, you know, a lot of guys in recent memory, has been under the spotlight. He's used to it. He's used to getting paid, so the money shouldn't overwhelm him. But there's when's the last time the Bears had this much pressure slash interest going into this? It's probably 15 plus years ago.
When's the last time they had this much offensive talent? When's the last time the Bears had a legitimate star number one receiver and a legitimate star number two receiver? That's just not that, you know, and a star quarterback. I couldn't tell you the last time he had Jay Cutler. Didn't he have Alshon Jeffrey?
Yeah, he had Alshon. They had Brandon Marshall for a minute. They had that, those two guys. I mean, they were solid. They were a real team. And that's kind of what this. But Jay, by that time, was a veteran player. Played, you know, Caleb's been in Lincoln Riley's offense. There is a little bit of a jolt. You know, yet Waldron runs more of the Shanahan operation. There's time to just get used to playing in a system where you're probably under center a little more. Now, part of it is, as an offensive coordinator, you're not going to force him to do things he doesn't want to do, but you also have to kind of find a middle ground. So I'm fascinated. I like you said, Ryan Poles, I give him an A+ for about the last 12 months. He's been kicking ass and taking names.
No, I think he's done a really good job. And that's just one of the things I believe to be true. Like, I never understood. Listen, you could criticize me all day long, but it's like I change my position all the time because I get new information. The other thing I think is funny about being in a public job, whether you're a quarterback or a mayor or a talk show host, things that look like a hot take end up not being a hot take. I mean, if I'd have told you a year before it happened, Kevin Durant's going to go to the Warriors, you'd be like, what are you talking about? Oklahoma City's a finals level team. And, you know, if you'd have said, you know, Sean Payton's going to take that Denver job. I mean, I remember when he took it, he wouldn't talk to me the last couple of days when the rumor got out. And I'm like, he wanted the Chargers job. He didn't want that Russell Wilson thing. That's not going to, there are so many situations that I would have said 10 years ago, it's a hot take. Like, I didn't get JJ McCarthy at all. And then all of a sudden I got two people from the combine. One said, well, yeah, we just talked to him at the whiteboard. He was unbelievable. And I was like, oh, that's what I heard about Baker before he went one. And then all of a sudden I saw 21 extra pounds show up. So the JJ McCarthy stuff is kind of one of these. If you'd have said it a year ago, there's going to be a wild pursuit of J.J. McCarthy to be a top five quarterback. A year ago, I would have been like, you're out of your mind. He's skinny.
A year ago, I would have said watching the Penn State game, you know, three, 4 months ago. They're like, you're nuts. The Ohio State, he made some plays against Ohio State and Alabama.
He made two great throws.
That.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. When you draft a guy, you're not really just thinking about week one. Right, you're really thinking about 2027, 2028, 2030. You're thinking about him being your quarterback for a decade plus. He just turned 21 years old. For example, Will Levis is going to be 25, right? So it's like the age matters. What he was asked to do matters. I saw John Lynch talk to the press today, and he's like, you know, I wanted to go to the USC Pro Day. And he's like, one of my main scouts is like, don't waste your time. Go to the Michigan Pro Day. They have 18 players. We ain't taking Caleb. Go watch the talent. So he played on a team, Colin, that is going to set potentially the NFL record for players drafted in one individual draft. They already set the combine record. They set six offensive linemen. Only five guys can play. I don't even know how that's possible.
Right.
But that shows you, it's like USC. Matt Castle's getting drafted. He's not even taking a snap. Shows you the talent's at a different level. Well, when I out-talent most people, I don't need to be playing like Lincoln Riley and that, you know, trying to score 45 points. That's not how Harbaugh's ever played. So I think you start, you know, judging him on the context of everything and character and all the intangible stuff. Let's face it, it doesn't matter as much as the other positions. Jalen Carter has a ton of red flags. He's a 6'5", 320-pound interior rusher. He was never falling out of the top 10.
Right.
If a quarterback had those, I don't care how talented he is, he's not getting drafted high.
Yeah.
He's just not. So wide receivers, defensive linemen, people are like, oh, yeah, we'll figure it out.
So
quarterback matters.
Marvin Harrison Jr., I think, benefits from his dad's very sort of quirky personality. His dad, you know, it's very well known.
I've never even heard the guy talk, his dad or Marvin Harrison Jr.
So it was very well under. I mean, I had a source tell me, I've had two sources, once when he was playing and once recently, talking about Marvin Harrison's dad. Like, he didn't, like, after practice, sometimes he wouldn't shower in the facility. He would literally go home. He didn't hang out with the players. So he was an oddball. Like, first of all, he only played on one side of the field with Peyton Manning. He was sort of kind of a rigid personality. Yeah. There was the story about gun charges, Philadelphia murder. I mean, there's a lot of shit out there. So his son goes to the combine. He won't do a pro day. He won't go to the combine. And my takeaway is, well, his dad, you can watch him play. He just doesn't look like anybody else. I love Romo Odunze, but he doesn't have quite the explosiveness. The kid out of LSU is good. He doesn't quite have, Harrison's just, he's like Calvin Johnson. I just don't see any holes. And the truth is, Ohio State does a good job with receivers, and his dad is probably giving him all sorts of insight. So it's funny about, like, people are getting caught up in Marvin Harrison, and they're like, oh, he doesn't talk, it's odd. I'm like, that's dad. Marvin Harrison, there's a 30 for 30 there. Like,
totally.
I know everything about Randy Moss. I know a lot about Calvin Johnson, who's a pretty reticent guy, doesn't talk. I don't know anything about Marvin Harrison. There's two great 30 for 30s that have never been done. Michael Jordan's wizard years. They were
that won't get done either.
It was a S show, and Michael won't let any of that stuff out. And the second one is Marvin Harrison in Indianapolis. I mean, he was on the team, but players would tell you he just wasn't one of the guys, like, at all. So that's his son. So I'm like, I kind of chalk it up to, like, father, like son.
Yeah. Well, one thing I saw texting around, I don't know if Marvin Harrison was going to run like 4.45.
Yeah.
And if you run 4.52, when we're talking about the elite of the elite, Larry Fitzgerald, the Julio Jones ran like a 4.44 with a broken foot. Remember at his pro day, the Calvin Johnsons of the world, he's not quite that. And his dad's like, none of this stuff matters. Just, it doesn't matter. So he's not doing any of it. He's at any other position, at the quarterback position, it would be weird. Like, even Caleb threw at the pro day, right? Which I give him credit, because when you work out at a pro day, who does it help? Brendan Rice. It helps your teammates. Marvin Harrison's in his own little world. No one cares if wide receivers are in their own little world. You watch wide receivers during contract negotiations in the NFL. It's always a big hoopla. It's just not like that at other positions. So, you talk to people in the NFL, they don't all believe that Marvin might be the best prospect in this draft, the kid at LSU, but he's got some off-the-field questions. Rome is probably a little safer, bigger, but is he as fast? Is he as crisp? It depends who you talk to. Where all these guys are getting drafted somewhere between 6 and 12. So, at the end of the day, that's the other thing that bothers me. Like, he fell in the draft. He went 7th or 9th. It's not falling in the draft. Quarterbacks push guys down. Offensive linemen push guys down. If you get drafted at 11th overall, you're pretty highly viewed in NFL circles, I think it's safe to say.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing! I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying 4th season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, we got to give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are going to be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
So one of the things, John Middlecoff, 3 and Out, former NFL scout, one of the things people come up to me all the time when I mention my podcast, or they ask me about the volume, and you've got a lot of fans out there. And one of the things that I think is a strength is you're a very relatable guy. You like your vodka. You like your gambling. You're just like a relatable guy. You like your golf. I want to talk about the Shohei Ohtani story, because my takeaway, and I know it came off as sort of maybe callous, but as long as he didn't bet baseball, I don't care. First of all, our life experiences shape us. My first job out of college was Vegas. I just knew gamblers. It didn't mean anything. I didn't think they were bad people. I mean, people are doing things on Wall Street with my 401k. I have much greater concerns that what they're doing in a sports book at the Hilton. The second thing is, when you're young and you're making a lot of money, and like, I'm not talking like $1 million. I'm talking like Mahomes, Shohei Ohtani. You have people that are really doing a lot of your work for you. You're not doing your books. I mean, everybody in Hollywood, even B actors, they have entertainment attorneys and accountants. Shohei Ohtani is not looking at his checking account like the rest of us are. Like, he has no idea. He may have multiple checking accounts in Los Angeles to avoid taxes. You know, you've got LLCs, S-Corps, yeah. You're doing whatever you can. Now, he's an employee, so there's limitations on what he can do. But, you know, you're all trying to, in California with 13.5%, you know, state taxes, to avoid it. This part, I totally believe. He's not watching his checking account. Like, that money is going to his attorneys. It's going to his stock portfolio. I heard when Tiger Woods was in his prime, he was sending a check of, and I'm not joking, like $20 million a month to his financial advisor. Like, they just off the top, $20 million, $240 million. It was something absurd like that.
Yeah.
It was.
He was making $100 million a year. So if he was writing a $15 million check or $10 million check, it's not that crazy.
Maybe it was $20 million a year off the top, just went to the market. So it was some absurd amount. And, you know, you've got people that do this. I can buy Ohtani saying, listen, man, he's a friend. I have a checking account. I gave him, you know, I it's like power of attorney. I allowed him to take some stuff out because I'm busy, and it goes sideways fast. That's a lot of money. If you're drawing stuff out of Ohtani's account and it's $7 million, you're thinking, I'm taking $4,000. He doesn't have a clue, which he doesn't. I can buy that Ohtani didn't know and feels completely burned by a friend. I can buy that. Can you?
Yeah, I actually played golf last week with a guy that owns a big insurance company in Boston, and he has actors and Major League Baseball players, basically their life insurance accounts. And he said he's never talked to one of them. He just was on the phone getting business with one of the, he wouldn't tell me the name. He's like, you know, rules, but one of the main actresses in Hollywood. And he talked to the person that runs all of her money, and all she has to do is say yes or no, and they'll do it. And that he runs the point. She's not checking her checking account every day, like you said, like me, right?
Right.
So to me, I think there's twofold on this. One, the overreaction that gambling, I grew up around, my dad was a farmer and knew a lot of people that risked a lot in business, and that was their mentality, and they gambled a lot. I've been around a lot of gamblers my entire life. People have been gambling since the history of time. It's got to be one of the longest running professions in the world. People have been doing it well before any of this stuff existed. It goes back to the early 1900s with sports, right? Think about some of the scandals. So this reaction of like, well, this is getting crazy. This is Michael Jordan. One of the things he's known for is he's gamble all the time. So how it's this notion that guys don't think like that. Now, he denied it today. He claimed that he knew nothing about it.
Right.
And I heard you say if he had done it, as long as he's not betting on his team to lose, which I understand, I don't even think it would be that big a deal if he was gambling. One, you're gambling on football or EPL soccer. Who cares? And two, it's very realistic. He just signed a $700 million contract where he was cool getting $20 million over the next 10 years. Does that not show you how rich the guy is?
Yeah.
Name me another human besides like Warren Buffett that would agree to do that.
I mean,
that.
People forget how much money like Kobe Bryant made in Turkey or Brad Pitt made overseas. Like American audiences have no idea. When you're George Clooney, you're Brad Pitt, Denzel Washington, you're making $30 million a year, Leonardo DiCaprio, European commercial. You go to Italy and Leonardo DiCaprio's like commercials in Italy. Kobe Bryant made a fortune in China, in Turkey. So like, can you imagine what Shohei Ohtani makes in Asia?
Well, it's reported that it's $60 million this upcoming year. It easily could be way higher. I remember when Hideki Matsuyama won the Masters and Paul Azinger is like, he might be the next billion-dollar athlete. Just Japanese golfer, right? There's a small percentage. Remember Yao Ming we talked about forever? The Asian market is huge. One, like they were very close. Clearly, they'd known each other for a while. Not crazy that he stole. I think it's crazier that a bookie. I'm fascinated by this bookie. To be able to run lines at $4.5 million. Like how you have the ability to run a line of credit. Like even Vegas, right? A big money guy. I mean, $1 million line of credit for a super rich guy with a company that's worth hundreds of millions. That's pretty big. So you're getting lines of credit. This guy must. I'm fascinated by this whole bookie when it all comes out. This operation is probably pretty big, which probably hints why the feds were after this guy.
Right.
Maybe some Hollywood guys. But I just don't really care. And my first reaction is I just want to see this guy play. Now, Ethan Strauss, our buddy, wrote an article. I couldn't disagree more. Like, I just think that...
What was his article?
Basically saying that gambling is like... I don't want to... Not ruining society, but just getting so aggressive and we're becoming numb to it. I say, well, what about alcohol? I mean, it's been a driving force in society in the history of time.
Well, here's one of the things. Whenever I see journalists... You know, and they can be, I think journalists, I've said this before, my top criticism, they have agendas, acknowledge it, we all do. And secondly, don't be naive. If you're going to be a journalist, then be a true journalist. Do you know the average bet with DraftKings is $4? It's hard to ruin your family if you're betting 10 of those a day, right? It's $4. I used to work for another gambling company. They told me their average bet was $4.50. That includes big bettors. The second thing, the disturbance or distortion rate among gamblers is 1%, of which every time I read an ad, I have a 1-800 phone number I have to give out. The distortion or disturbance rate with alcohol is 6%. Should we close all the bars in Chicago? Like, and they don't read, they say, please drink responsibly. That's about the only warning you get. So my take on this.
I do both. It's not even arguable. Alcohol is way worse for you than gambling. I don't care who you are.
Yeah. It's bad for your brain. It's bad for your finances.
Not debatable.
You're bad for your liver. You know, and also when you look at gambling, look at the hold the state lottery has. Look at how much money people give to the state lottery and the small amount the public a winner gets back. The hold in gambling, I bet $50 in a game. And I make a good living. I bet $20 on a 2-3 team parlay. The hold on a straight bet, 50% chance I get it back.
Ethan also defended Ohtani in the sense that if he was gambling, it is complicated if you're foreign, you come to this country and wait, I play in Arizona, it's legal. I come to California, it's illegal. I go to Texas, it's illegal, but then I go to Chicago. It's like, it is kind of complicated, right? So, and the leagues jumped head first into this.
Yeah.
And I think for the players, the NFL found immediately that it was a complicated scenario and they got really aggressive with the punishment. Obviously, you can't cover, you know, gamble on sports. You're allowed to gamble on other sports. You just have to leave the facility.
Yeah.
But it's, they jumped so fast and then they expected everyone to follow the rules, but money's all relative. I mean, I played golf with a guy that caddied at the big country club in Arizona, and he says there are countless gambling games where putts can be $200,000 to $300,000 by the 18th hole. So, money, which to that guy, if he's worth $500 million, is no different than if I'm worth $100,000 and I'm betting $1,000 is a lot of money to me.
Yeah,
so money, $4.5 million sounds a lot of money to 99.9% of people. To Shohei Ohtani, let's face it, it is a tiny, tiny percentage of his yearly income, let alone the guy's net worth.
Well,
if he's even gambling, if you want to believe him. I simply don't care. I just want to watch him play baseball.
Yeah. I mean, the greatest basketball player ever in many eyes is Michael Jordan, prodigious gambler. The best analyst in NBA history is Charles Barkley, noted gambler. Like, we think of football and gambling. The truth of the matter is, basketball players, golfers, it's just part of our culture. And I think if you look, you know, I'll be honest with you, John, when I'm out, I've been a public figure for a while, right? Maybe the 13th rung of a public figure in Los Angeles.
People know you, Colin. People know you.
So when I go out, the overwhelming thing people say for 6 months of the year, hey, what's your blazing five this week? I've been doing blazing five for 19 years. So this is not like DraftKings sponsors the show. I've been doing this forever when I made nothing on it. Now I do. DraftKings helps support the volume and other ventures. But I think you have to understand Europe's been way ahead of us on this. And people may say, oh, there's ads everywhere. You don't have to watch the ads. There's also tire ads, mattress ads have dominated sports my entire life. Beer ads. College athletics, there's like hard alcohol ads, like binge drinking alcohol. So I'm not just saying this because of my relationship, our relationship as a company with this. In the end, I think if Ethan Strauss did make that argument, and I'm sure he did, that it's confusing for Ohtani, I'm making the argument that when you make that kind of money, people are running your bank accounts. And I could absolutely, you say to yourself, they have $4 million. It's amazing if you just kept taking out 20 grand, 20 grand, 20. You start looking at that account. I bet you he doesn't even see that account at all.
100%. I also think that the overall discussion, I think about some people that I'm still friends with, either that I grew up with and then that I went to college with. One of our binding connections is gambling. And one thing a lot of journalists who and people in the media, I would say, that have the journalistic background that talk about this stuff, wouldn't you say a large percentage of them not only have never gambled, but will never gamble?
That's right.
It's not really, it's not their thing. It's not in their DNA. You said I'm a normal guy. I just do what most people do. Like most of my friends in life, and I don't mean they gamble thousands of dollars, but they just bet on it. I get texts all the time during football season. Who do you like this weekend? Who do you like tonight? I mean, that's just how people discuss. And we were talking like that well before DraftKings and these other companies ever came around.
That's right. It's like I was the other night, Ann and I went to a Bulls game, and I was laughing. I'm like, I said, you know, Ann and I got, we like to have a cocktail. And we'll have a couple of cocktails, watch the game, and we're just having a ball together. And we went out later that night. And I said, are we the only people in this arena having fun? Like everybody else is watching the game. And I'm like, we got cocktails. We're having a good time. 30% of Americans don't drink. 50% of Americans don't bet. I mean, Jesus, half the men, 50%, I think it's all the intimacy in America is by 50% of the men. There's a lot of people not gambling, not drinking, not sexing. And it's like, thank God I'm on the other side of that. Thank God.
It'd be a shitty life. I don't want to know anything about it. I'll promise you that.
I've seen your beautiful girlfriend. You're in great shape. All right. DraftKings did release its win total. So we both talked about the power of Kirk Cousins. Atlanta is a shocking 10.5 over under. And the Vikings, who I think are stacked offensively, are at 6.5. That's Kirk Cousins. Let me throw another one at you. This one. So when the Jets last year had Aaron Rodgers, I said, listen, the history of old quarterbacks is they got to have good O-lines. Russell Wilson's first year in Denver, they didn't. He stunk. Stafford Rams did. Then his third year, I think it was, they didn't. He struggled. Brady's first year in Tampa, excellent.
They were
good. They had injuries. It wasn't as good. You can't have a 40-year-old. That's why Atlanta for Kirk Cousins works. That's a really good O-line. That's why Jared Goff works. He's younger, but great O-line. So the Jets have signed some kind of like Tyron Smith, who will play about 13 games a year, kid from the Ravens. The Jets are 9.5. And I'm like, timeout. If you look at the AFC, Deshaun Watson's back. Herbert's got a legitimate coach. CJ Stroud is moving up fast. Trevor Lawrence will be healthy. Tua Mike McDaniels are going nowhere. Josh Allen now has, between Kincaid and Cook, has some really nice offensive weapons. I look at the Jets in 9.5 and I think, boy, that's a bad O-line for an old quarterback off an Achilles surgery. I said it this year during the season, Aaron being relevant in January to me is over. It's nothing against Aaron. It's just old quarterbacks and crappy O-lines don't work. What do you make on? I would bet the under on that all day.
Well, I've been down on him, but if I wanted to make the case, Miami just lost a ton of talent.
Yes.
They had a lot of guys walk out the door. They also lost Vic Fangio, and their defense was already in question, and Vic called them out thinking like no one wants to focus, and I think a lot has to do with the city they live in. Are they about to pay Tua $45, $50 million a year? Because if they do, I'm out. And so to me, Miami still has some question marks, even if we all agree Mike is a great play caller. Quarterback, I'm definitely not sold on. And defensively, I mean, they just lost their best defensive player. He just walked in free agency. The Patriots, now the Jets finally beat him, I think the last week of the season, have owned the Jets. Didn't Bill beat him like 8 straight seasons, swept him? Well, Bill's gone. I think the Patriots got a couple years of coming to Jesus, and Robert Kraft is about to find out what the NFL is really like. It could be ugly there. And then the Bills, like, whenever I see the Super Bowl windows closed, I laugh, as long as you have Josh Allen. When you have Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, your roster can be in flux. You got a chance. But the Jets did beat them in one game last year. So I'd have to look at the rest of their schedule. 8-9 wins, best. That's assuming Aaron Rodgers, who, let's face it, you go back, because part of Russell Wilson isn't just the last 2 years. Remember the last year in Seattle. So now it's a body of work going the wrong way. Aaron, the last year in Green Bay, something was off. It might have just been age. In the history of sports, most guys at 38, 39 start trending the wrong way. I know he's a healthy guy. He looks good, but he wasn't quite as fast. His arm's still there, but a huge part of his ability was the ad-lib, and that made him a great player.
John, the analytics, Greg Cosell and Warren Sharp and others were on this. Aaron's analytics is he just didn't run anymore. And if he doesn't run, I mean, say what you want.
He's not as fast probably anymore, so he doesn't want to risk getting tackled or hit.
Yeah, old guys don't want to get hit. I mean, Eli Manning and Brady mastered it. Get rid of it quick or figure out how to roll and not get hit. So I don't think Aaron isn't quite as committed as a lot of the young guys that are really bigger, stronger. And I think the only way to be good is sort of to be focused like Kirk Cousins later or obsessed like Brady. I don't think there's a way to be casually. And Aaron, I've heard this from multiple people. Aaron, he's not going to sit and watch game film all weekend. That's not what he's going to do as a personality. He's going to read some things and listen to music and do his own thing. He is not Brady on the film. He's not Peyton. He's not Breeze as a workaholic. Aaron is one of those guys.
It's because he had more physical capability than those guys.
It's like a rock star. The Bonos and the bands, Edges that have survived, didn't have long periods of drug use. They took care of their body. They partied. But they have aged very well. The bands that didn't haven't. I think Aaron didn't quite take the same level of care. And I think he's aging faster than other guys.
Yeah, I think if he can't move anywhere remotely like he used to, that's a problem. The one thing he has going that Peyton lost, Breeze lost, their arms failed them. Rodgers' arm is still strong. So to me, he's still going to be able to function. But I think the day and age of him just being some lock elite player, it's been gone now for a couple years. And I just think the question now is the pressure on the offensive coordinator, which, let's face it, if you just pulled people in the NFL, is Nate Hackett any good or is he not any good? Most people would say he's not any good. And then the other reason he's there is because he meshes with Aaron. So is Aaron just telling him what to do? There's got to be a little give and take. And you saw how many times this year with Aaron shaking his head, with play calls when he would show up. It's just, I think it's got a chance to be a pattern. They do have some players. There's no disputing that. They have impact players on both sides of the ball. But if you can't protect a quarterback who now can't really move, Jared Goff, like you said, can't move. Well, he's got arguably the best offensive line in the league, doesn't need to move. Well, if these guys, if Smith gets hurt, if Moses gets hurt, if their interior offensive line isn't any good, you're a sitting duck. Even Zach Wilson kept them alive last year because he just kind of scrambled around. And so, yeah, I think the Jets are fascinating. That division, though, I think Miami could be in for come back to the average a little bit, and the Patriots are in for real NFL life now. The other thing, I saw the Cowboys like 10.5 too. That seems a little high. I mean, they've lost a lot of players.
So, by the way, Niners, Ravens, Chiefs, 11.5. I tend to bet the unders once you get into that space. Lions, Packers, Eagles, Bills, Bengals, Dolphins, Falcons, Cowboys. Falcons, the head scratcher, a little bit, 10.5. Texans, Jets, 9.5. I'd buy that with the Texans. I don't with the Jets. Rams pull back to 8.5. I think Aaron Donald, they subtract a win. I thought they would be 9.5-ish. Vikings, very low. Kirk Cousins, not there. And Patriots, Panthers at 4.5. Titans, Broncos, 5.5. Again, I do believe with the Broncos, I think they're going to draft a quarterback. And I think, to be honest with you, Bo Nix would win immediately because I think he's got 61 starts. I just interviewed, I talked to the kid last week for 30 minutes, 35 minutes on and off the air. He's just a grown up. He's ready to play NFL football. Whether or not you think he has this high ceiling, that kid's seen it. You know, he's had 5 offensive coordinators in 5 years and he's worked with all of them. He's going to work.
I think adversity has proven to matter a lot with a lot of these quarterbacks that have had some struggles in college. Like Mahomes wasn't winning a lot. Josh Allen was told, we don't have scholarships for you, right? Lamar Jackson tumbled in the draft. Bo Nix got his ass kicked in the SEC. I mean, he was viewed even when he transferred to Oregon. So, yeah, I'm fascinated by him. I think he needs to go to the right spot. And Sean Payton, I mean, let's face it, they're kind of desperate right now. I guess they could just kind of roll it over a year, but I don't think Sean Payton's making $18 million a year to try to win 4 or 5 games. Like, he's going to try to compete immediately in that division. Now, with Harbaugh in it, it got a lot harder. Even the Raiders, I don't know if Pierce is going to be a great head coach. They do have impact players. They're not like an easy team to play.
No. I've said this for years. The Raiders have 5 or 6, and they have key positions, star receiver, rush end, left tackle. Like, if they could get a quarterback right, I don't doubt the Raiders. The shit at the end of the year, I thought they were really competitive, playing with a lot of fire and purpose with Aiden O'Connell. So I'm okay with it.
By the way, I was in the car today and I turned you on right as you were talking to Mick Cronin about his struggles. And he gave the line, I still turn left on Sunset. That's one of the greatest lines I've ever heard. I don't think whether you win 8 games or you win 30, I still turn left on Sunset. That's an all-timer.
Yeah, he comes over that hill from Encino. It's a left right by the Circular Hotel, and you go left on Sunset into Bel Air, then Beverly Hills, then right to UCLA. It's a pretty good life.
I haven't been to every campus in America, but when you walk on UCLA's campus, there's got to be a short list of campuses that can compete with that.
Oh, no, I don't think there's anything like it. I mean, USC, Stanford, you know, it's LA, it's the Bay Area, but nope, there's nothing like UCLA I've ever been to. John Middlecoff, former NFL scout, his podcast is 3 and Out. Chopped it up for a little over an hour this week. Loved seeing you, buddy. We'll talk in a week.
Okay, see you, Colin.
The Volume.
Thanks so much for listening. If you've enjoyed the podcast, take a moment, rate, and review.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying 4th season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.